I think that there is a difference based on the application of AI. So I think that when AI is writing code, for example, which as we all know is such a, common use case, when AI is writing code, then you have a really fast speed of execution, and it's on the humans to do the review work that comes out, that is basically reviewing the code to make sure that it looks, I mean, you should be doing it, I should say.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solinox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest today. We have Richard Call. She is the CEO and founder of Compliance. So, Richard, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. How are you?
Thanks, Solomon. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Yes, I'm glad that you're here as well. So, I was really interested on this because there's a lot of, with AI agents and there's so forth, especially in the government and with a lot of, with FinTech, with HIPAA compliance, there needs to be a lot of auditing and really a lot of governance around it. So, before we really get into the show, just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how did compliance all start?
Yeah, sounds good. I think the best way to describe myself is that I'm a little bit of a data privacy nut, as I like to say. I like when I can ideally control my data, and I don't like when companies use more of my data than they actually need. And so that led us to compliance with a why, because I kind of felt like there was a limit to how much I was protecting myself with the security configurations and privacy decisions that I was making in my individual life. I think, it's 2026 and we all live in the real modern world. And so you have to trust a lot of companies with your data every day. I kind of got to a point where I said, the best way to protect consumers is actually to help secure the enterprises who hold the world's data. And that's the why behind compliance with a why.
So with that on, with making compliance a little bit different, so how does it kind of work through for the audience that's kind of trying to understand what is the main goal of what you're looking to achieve with compliance?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we really try and do is we help organizations get visibility on their security risks and actually monitor their security controls. And we do that using a combination of automations plus AI to be able to unlock that in its truest form for these companies. So as you know, a lot of times security and GRC teams rely on point-in-time information and samples of data to basically validate or test important controls for their business. And there's a limit to the usefulness of that and the impact of that. And it's fine in a world where, everything was done manually. But in today's world, you can use integrations stacked with AI to actually create true visibility, true risk visibility, to true controls monitoring visibility. And that's what we do.
So, with that, because I'm real curious, because, from our background of, with Solinox, we have to deal with a lot of compliance in terms of cloud governance and having to deal with, with FedRAMP, with HIPAA involved. So, with that, especially with companies really trying to get further into the government space or trying to, pass these audits. So when your agents kind of come through, do they look through the existing controls of the security side? Do they look at the policies? I'm really curious on how it all starts and comes together.
Yeah. Let's talk through it. So absolutely. So when we start working with a client, we basically understand what standards are they pursuing. And then those are instantaneously populated into the platform, either through our, cross-mapped off-the-shelf controls or via the company's custom control set. And then we say kind of, okay, well, what's your tech stack? Like, how do you check from the source of truth that these controls are in place or not? And with enterprises, it's usually a mix. 60-70% is coming from tech and like actually can be pointed to. And some of it is a bit more of a manual evidence gathering procedure for whatever reason. So then we start to integrate all of the checks that can be integrated. And we set up control ownership and basically automated reminders for all of the checks that may need to still go to a control owner. For at that point, what you have is a steady flow of evidence against your controls. Now you need different layers of checks to actually validate that that evidence is proving compliance with those controls. And we've set up different checks. So we have a freshness check, integration check, AI check, and of course, a final manual human in the loop review if you want it. And so what happens is we have customizable AI agents that have been created for these different standards, as well as fully custom to each organization. And you can set up your criteria and say, hey, you know, for this control, I want to integrate with AWS. I want to run that check. Then I want it to do a second, you know, qualitative check for XYZ things. And that's actually how it works.
So with it being, you know, with there's so much customization with the checks, you know, with everything coming on with AI and security, especially in the governance realm, do you feel that it is just on a change management side, have you found that it's been a little bit of a challenge for integration and so forth for the agents? Have you found the transition to be pretty smooth? What are your thoughts on that?
Great question. What we've actually found is that GRC teams feel relieved to have a partner who cares about the nuance of their GRC program as much as they do. I think too many tools out there right now are a blunt instrument. A lot of GRC tech is blunt instruments. And I think what we bring to the picture is a precision power tool. And we have the services to support that model. And so we actually partner with our clients to look at what are their controls, what are the checks that they need, and then we implement it for scalable impact. And an implementation typically takes about 6 to 12 weeks. And in those 6 to 12 weeks, it is a white glove service process where our team is in the driver's seat, supporting companies to set up their integrations and their custom AI agents. But what you get on the other end of those 6 to 12 weeks is a truly organization-specific, scalable GRC platform and GRC AI agents. And clients really, really do find, I would use the word relief in that.
I can imagine, because even with, you know, from a few clients that we have to work with, especially with Microsoft Copilot, because, you know, first of all, you want to make sure that your all of your data is secured, of course, and you know, confined and isolated. You know, but with that, you know, the whole thing is just that on, you know, having to look through, and I really liked compliance on this side, because I think that a little bit of the foundation is sometimes left with AI agents. And what I mean by that is, you know, looking at your security, looking at your data loss prevention, you know, looking at these governance of what we're already talking about with compliance and have it integrated with, you know, Defender, if it's Microsoft Defender or if it's AWS's. So do you feel like in today's time, there's a lot of hype around AI, there's a lot of good marketing per se. So when you kind of bring this forward to those government tests, is it usually part of like a process on how it's, you know, integrated with their existing cloud environment? Or, you know, with, you said with a lot of legacy environments, there's a lot of changes with it. So in your mind, have you seen it as, you know, that, you know, the audience and what bring forward is still that, I should say, I don't want to say resistance, as you said, but a little bit more of, you know, really making sure they use the agents more effectively.
If I'm understanding your question correctly, I think that there is this basis of partnership and learning that I think a lot of our clients actually want in their vendor relationships. They want a partner who's going to show them how they can optimize the use of AI, purpose-built AI for GRC. And they'll often come to us and say, like, let me use an example. We have AI agents that support the TPRM process end-to-end. One of those agents is a customizable agent that you can use to review responses from your vendors about certain, you know, potential risk areas. And what they'll basically come to us and say, like, look, you know, we don't know how to set this up. And we're kind of like, you don't need to know. Like, it's not a technical process. It's just explaining, okay, well, what do you currently think about when you're reviewing a vendor for risk? Just document that. And then that's all that we need. And then we basically can easily add that into the agent. And all of a sudden, you have an agent that's working at scale, but playing by your rules. And there's something really compelling about that, that clients kind of latch onto, especially when they're not having to figure it all out on their own.
So, you know, with compliance and software hazard, you know, with you bringing it forward, you know, what is your vision for the company, your definition of six for the next year?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that right now, from our perspective, we're really invested on making sure that our AI is not a buzzword. I say that because too much of marketing right now kind of focuses on the word AI. But, you know, AI is a really, really powerful tool if used well. And it needs to be deployed thoughtfully and in a purpose-built way for GRC. And so what we are thinking about right now is for every single kind of domain that GRC teams work in, whether that's third-party risk or audit prep or risk management, we are thinking about how exactly AI can take care of the work that GRC teams really need it to do and how AI can also increase visibility. And so it's kind of a two-pronged problem. Like, what's the manual work that GRC teams don't want to do? And then what is the work that no human can do? Because there's just no amount of time that would allow someone to have the same level of visibility that AI can have. And that's how we attack each part of our platform. And it's been like a privilege, really fun. And it's been something that we've been working on every day for the last few months, and we'll continue to work on for the months to come.
You know, even with Claude and you know, so forth, we've seen so much of an improvement since, I would say, since the holidays, really, on just how much of a drive it's been with the AI agents now, with Claude coming out with the preview version on their security platform where it can do cybersecurity of auditing of cybersecurity. You know, with it becoming more and more, you know, this AI automation and wanting to make sure that we put in this human in the loop, do you think that in the future, really in the next year or two, that it's going to continue more forward? Because there's a lot of people on the risk side that are saying we're taking the speed, like OpenClaw, like anything else, there's these speed of execution versus review. Do you think that's going to be different with the on the government side and with HIPAA and with, you know, federal with financial regulations, or do you think it's going to more fall behind?
I think that there is a difference based on the application of AI. So I think that when AI is writing code, for example, which as we all know is such a, you know, common use case, when AI is writing code, then you have a really fast speed of execution, and it's on the humans to do the review work that comes out, you know, that is basically reviewing the code to make sure that it looks, I mean, you should be doing it, I should say, before you deploy changes to your environment. When it comes to GRC, I think what's interesting is that AI is doing a lot of review work. It's not actually building something net new. It is actually, you know, analyzing a lot of data. And that's what AI is best at. And what happens is that then you have human in the loop to vet the findings that AI flags, right? So for example, whether it's, you know, third-party risk or internal controls from our side, or HIPAA or FedRAMP or anything else, AI is flagging findings up to the GRC team of our clients and saying, like, look, we've analyzed all of this data. Here are the risks to your org. Here are the places where you are not compliant. And I think that what happens kind of with that model is that you inherently have a human in the loop, because you're hopefully going to look at AI's findings and understand the rationale and what is the evidence that should, you know, that told AI that this was non-compliant. And then you're going to action it. But that motion actually requires human in the loop. And also the speed of execution is almost like the speed of identification and the speed of review. And then you're kind of checking that review is actually such a minor part of the equation. Does that make sense, Solomon? So it really depends on the application of the AI, I think.
Yeah. I always get this all the time. You know, sometimes when we make this transition, there's always, at least from our experience, there's this hiccup with, you know, doing the pull request and having to make sure that all of your feet, you know, on how we do it on moving over from QA to production. There's this, when we implement, you know, our workflows with automation, there's that time that it takes to be able to look through the codes and having to review. And so I was just kind of curious on your spot, especially so with, you know, with dealing with these more regulated industries, that will they give up the speed, you know, rather than the audit through of checking through, especially when you're kind of going through in the production and, you know, checking on that. So I'm just, yeah. I was real curious on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also, so different applications of AI also have different vectors of impact. And so, of course, speed is an important vector of impact, and we all know that. Reduction of manual work is an important, you know, vector of impact, but increased visibility is also an important vector of impact. And I think when it comes to GRC, that's one of the most important vectors. And if you think about that, like when AI is coding, you get speed, right? But when AI is analyzing data that no human could ever analyze to identify noncompliance, all of a sudden, speed, it's not about speed because no human could actually do that. And it becomes about something else. And now you're reviewing to make sure that the outputs are relevant, but there's no way that you could have done those same things manually, if you're thinking about the increased risk visibility. And so all of a sudden you're kind of saying like, look, this is net new benefit. Like this is not something we could have done manually that now we're doing with AI. No, no, you know, you're never going to go around and check, you know, the news about your vendors, all of your vendors every single day. How can you do that? It's impossible. So it's just net benefit. And then you review only the outputs, only the flags, right? And so then all of a sudden you're kind of like, it's a very, very positive, virtuous circle that you're creating with the application of AI and GRC. Whereas, you know, of course, when your AI is coding and, you know, doing other things, then it introduces more risk and there's more of a bottleneck with review time and other things. But that's why I think it really comes down to the application of AI.
Yeah. And I do agree with that. And so, you know, in your mind, Richard, is what's the one safeguard you think every organization should really keep human control, no matter how advanced the AI agent is? What would you say?
I mean, there's a lot of, I feel like my answer to this changes every month, by the way. I would have said, you know, access. I still think access is probably the biggest one. I think that we are not necessarily prepared for how much AI can access and does access right now. And keeping access controls tight in a world where, you know, AI agents are kind of like running around your organization, for lack of a better term, maybe running through or in your organization, maybe is a better term. But in that world, I think like access control for agents actually becomes a bigger and bigger conversation. And it's a tricky one. And so I think that figuring out and understanding kind of like ring fencing, you know, that access and making sure that AI is not getting more access than it needs. And also how does that kind of, you know, go down the chain. So for example, if you hand user A or employee A access to this AI and it has more, you know, access than employee A has, then all of a sudden is employee A getting access to more things than employee A should have? I think that's like a, you know, its own separate level of conversation about the downstream effects as well as the upstream effects of AI access.
And I can already see as a point with compliance, having that going it through to be able to check through, does this giving more of that user more of super access, super admin access by just giving a role, you know, having to do that due diligence and checking, I'm assuming that be part of what compliance as agents does, right? I would say.
Yeah. So we've also built, you know, our AI in a way that it can actually get role-based access and that it's actually limited to the user's capabilities. So if our AI is ever interacting or when our AI is ever interacting with the user, it actually reduces its context to match the context of that user. Just so that, you know, you have, when I say context, if a user has a certain role and certain permissions turned off, it will match that sort of permissioning. Whereas if the AI is speaking to an admin user, it will actually go ahead and tell them everything because, you know, the admin user has unlimited access. So we've done a good job kind of matching some of that. And then, of course, you can set up controls to do that, which then our AI can monitor from a different perspective.
That's impressive. That's impressive. I wanted to get really one of the questions I had in mind when you came on to the show, because I really wanted to get your perspective of it, because I don't know if you've heard much in the industry of where companies are more moving away from the cloud. They want to have their own data sovereignty of, it's called repatriation of the cloud, wanting to move forward. And now we're seeing, because of AI agents and with cloud costs going up, you know, there's a switch kind of the pendulum coming back into on-prem. So with that being said, with now we're kind of moving forward, especially in these regulated environments that you, these mission critical applications have to stay on-prem. They have to be secure with PII and so forth on the data, the amount of sensitive data, you know, with that switch that we're going, I'm really curious on your thoughts to really see on, you know, where do you see like kind of on the trend moving forward, especially with compliance being your company being a really big factor into that?
I mean, I think that what's happening from kind of an on-prem perspective is that the infrastructure of modern software tools needs to be more and more flexible. So we need to be able to allow for certain agents, certain features, certain data streams to be coming in from less like rigid inputs, like not only pre-built, self-hosted from our side and so on, but actually thinking about things like, okay, how do we build this so that the client can actually add their own LLM in here? Or how do we build it so that they can add their own, you know, AI subscription in here? And the features should actually work the same way, but you almost build it in a more building block modular sort of way. And that's how we are thinking about it, at least, because you got to future proof right now for certain trends that we're seeing just like that.
Yeah. And I was just really interested in that just because we're seeing it's such a, especially with customers now moving away towards that, and you're wanting to implement more of these AI tools and so forth, but wanting to keep it isolated for terms of security, especially for on the GRC side. I'm with compliance of starting forward. You've done so much with the company, and you know, I know we've kind of talked about a little bit before in the beginning of the interview, but you know, when this all came about, if you wanting to kind of start compliance, you know, walk through of just on, you know, because this industry can be you had a break in. So like, how did this start for you on this catalyst side? I'm so interested to see you being a leader. How did this come forward and bringing the team together and, you know, charting it out?
Yeah. I mean, I think founders need to have unhinged conviction that their idea deserves to exist in the world. And I guess that's sums it up. I think whether that unhinged conviction is delusional or appropriate remains to be seen for most founders out there. But I think the validation along the way and happy clients and, you know, closing Fortune 500 customers and being able to attract the likes of Google Ventures, those are all validations that make it seem a little bit less unhinged as the journey has proceeded.
So normally for on you at this stage now with compliance, what does a day-to-day look like for you on the side?
I really try to focus my time on kind of three different things. And I think as I'm evolving from founder to CEO, these things feel most natural. I think the first one is basically unblocking the team, whatever that means for them, right? So being able to hire senior leaders who can, you know, execute on their areas of the business is so important so that you're not focusing on management, but you're just focusing on unblocking. So whatever those leaders need to do their jobs or that week or that month, you know, that's the number one thing. The second thing is being a constant barometer for alignment. So again, I think that in a trust-based culture, if you're hiring good people to do their jobs well, then there's no need for in the most extreme version, micromanagement. But it's much before that, right? It's like you don't need to be looking at everything. You need to trust that your leaders across the business are able to do their jobs. But I think that it stems from a place of alignment, because if you got to make sure that with every leader and every person, actually, ideally across the organization, they're aligned to the vision and the way that we're going to work and the way we're going to achieve our goals that is being set at the company level. And then every conversation becomes almost like a barometer for that alignment in a very nuanced way. And any potential flags for misalignment have to be like caught early, raised, addressed, like aligned, and then we can move forward. And so a lot of the times I'm having conversations and like seeking signs of potential misalignment so that we can stop, pause, make sure that we're aligned and then move forward. Because I know that in a well-functioning company, people are making decisions every single day, all day long. They're making decisions about big things. They're making decisions about their time. They're making decisions about small things every single day. And if they are aligned to the general company vision and direction, then every decision they're making is hopefully informed by that. And then you can, you know, at that point, it's just a level of trust. And so hopefully you can deal with that. But yeah, so I think those are the first two things. And the last thing is just like whatever fires come up, you know, whatever fun there is in the day or the week to deal with is the last area on which I spend my time.
I'm sure it changes, you know, each week and, you know, each making sure that you're hitting those initiatives on that. So, you know, through your, you know, experience from changing from that founder to the CEO. So what would you say now within this world of, you know, really with the possibilities of AI agents and so companies moving towards and wanting to implement this in, you know, what would be your advice for another founder in your similar situation? You know, how to get to that next level? What, you know, what really pearls of wisdom would you kind of give to them from your learnings?
I think that it's really important to really, really stick to the problem that you're trying to solve. Understanding that problem with its nuances is an entire, you know, journey of its own. Once you do understand that problem, then creating the right solution for it, again, like it sounds so simple when I say it and so obvious, but I think a lot of companies kind of get distracted along the way. They get distracted by one specific big customer, or they get distracted by the trend. They get distracted by competitor parity. There's a lot of distractions in the game. And I think it's about saying like, look, at the end of the day, it's just a math equation. Like you need to put out a product that people want to buy. In order to do that, like you need to put out a product that solves a specific pain and you need to actually solve the pain. And then it's like marketing and sales and so on. But it's fundamentally, that's what it is. And I think a lot of people just get distracted about what that means. But it's actually very straightforward if you just stick to the principles.
Right. And I think even, you know, and even for myself and for others, sometimes you get so really caught up in over analysis paralysis of getting caught up. There's so many steps that I have to think about. You know, there might be other competitors that might do the same thing. So now you're thinking of, well, how do I stick differently? I'm sure even with on GRC side, there's other traditional tools. So in your mind, when you're mapping out for compliance, how do I, you know, stick differently? I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's very important, of course, but that's more marketing. And I think it's about like getting to that, you know, what is the core problem that you're solving? How are you solving it well? I've also found that most products don't solve problems that well. They solve it kind of, again, with a blunt instrument. And so I actually think that by solving it well, you end up differentiating yourself in most cases, which is kind of sad, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, it's just a journey of having going through it. So I'm sure even with on your side with compliance of having that. And as you said, sticking to that marketing, that sales and how do we make sure that we be that partner for the client? You know, so with that, you know, with it being with compliance, within your time that you're seeing with how the AI market and so forth is going, are you seeing like a consistent trend of people wanting to implement through that might be that there might be missing the goal on how AI has really been done from your experience and obviously having to work with agents and especially in this regulated field? What is the key thing that you're seeing in partners or in other leaderships that they might need to slow down? What advice would you have on that?
So I think a lot of enterprises that we're seeing are using AI in a relatively superficial way in the softwares that they have. And I think especially in GRC tech, a lot of our competitors as well, you know, talk about being AI powered, but it's not very deep. I think it's a lot of like marketing and it, like the use cases for it are quite shallow. And I think that what that does is it kind of erodes trust in like what the value of AI really can be. And I think it convinces more and more buyers actually that like AI is just a buzzword, and that most companies aren't doing it well. And so I think from my perspective, I would almost say, like, hold your vendors to a high standard. Like, if they're saying that they're an AI powered vendor and you know what AI can do, like, hold them to that standard and, you know, keep looking for a vendor until you find the one that's actually delivering on the promise of what AI can do. So I think right now it's a lot of options that are, yeah, just kind of too shallow.
No, that's good. It's so, you know, with you, on that side with having to look through, because you brought up a really good point of having to really look on the vendors. For people listening in for the conversation that are in similar situations or founders, you know, what would you say are specific signs a buyer should look for, you know, from the AI vendor, that how it's being worked?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the first question I'd ask myself is, like, can ChatGPT or Claude do this for me instead? Because I think a lot of the features that are out there are quite, like, again, I don't want to say LLM wrappers, but they are quite shallow regurgitations of an LLM. And I wonder, you know, the value that actually provides, because of course it does have, you know, it's in the system of record or this system of action. And so it does have context, which is great. But I think that it needs to go a step further to be held to a standard of, like, okay, this is something you should really be paying for, or you're just paying that, or just pay for this kind of the system of record as its core and use the AI on your own. Like, I think that there's also a really, you know, very real version of reality where, like, that is okay too. But yeah, so I think it's about understanding, like, what is the value that this AI is actually providing to me? And is this something that I can get on my own? Or is this something that I need this software to be providing? And don't be afraid to think of softwares as, you know, a system of action, and thinking of AI that can be added on from your side, if that's what, you know, makes sense from a cost perspective.
Yeah, I think it goes back on the depth side of it, how much depth it has. And then you even see in the market now that people are saying it's the death of SaaS apocalypse, because of, you know, as you said before, we're now getting to this stage, and I'm sure with, as AI continues to advance, I'm sure by the end of this year that you can be able to implement this on your own. You might not need that SaaS product, right? So I think what you had is spot on, Richard. So, you know, with it, because I, you know, on the side, you know, what would you say on, if let's say that you had that magic wand and that you were looking to implement AI and we're getting towards this ChatGPT 12 or 13, you know, what would you have AI really do, whether that's in from the business side, from, you know, on the enterprise, or from the personal side? What would you want AI to accomplish?
I read this quote that said something like, you know, I wish that AI would do my dishes so I could do my art, but instead AI is doing my art and I'm still doing my dishes. And I thought that was kind of a funny and good quote. So I'm going to echo that. I think that for me, there is still some level of trust to be built with tools like OpenClaw from a security perspective. I think that tools like that, that are more tailored to each individual and can be more configured and, like, open source available for individuals to use, are actually really, really powerful in helping to limit some of the noise in, like, daily admin and personal life admin. And I really do want that. But right now, again, like, the tooling is not there in a secure way. And so I'm feeling a little bit like I want the next level of security for tools like OpenClaw to show up. So that way we can actually use much more tailored AI agents for our personal use cases to reduce noise. From a B2B perspective, I actually think that, you know, all the AI that we are going to need is actually going to come. I think that folks are very aware of the opportunities that are building to it. So that would be my quick
answer. All right. No, and I think that on to that side, I think we're starting to really see more of it, especially from specifically for Claude and so forth, that sometimes even within the organization, keeping it, all of your relevant, you know, knowledge base and making it, having it to where Confluence or any tribal knowledge that I'm sure that you're having to go through with, you know, on the compliance of, you know, walking through those steps of what are the step-by-steps that can be done on a manual side, how can we automate that? So I fully agree on that. Just moving it forward, that's the goal for that. So Richard, you know, thank you so much for coming on. So for people wanting to learn more just on your journey and on compliance side, where can they learn more? Where can they be able to see if, you know, make sure that compliance could be used for them?
Absolutely. Well, I would encourage everyone to look on LinkedIn, both my profile and the company's profile. And then, of course, just compliance.com. And that's compliance spelled with a Y. So CompliancE.com.
Perfect. For those tuning in for the interview, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll have that. I'll have all of Richard and compliance information in the description. So be sure to check us out on the next episode. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no-fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solonox.net.